on that. But you know, here we are getting ready to come into a presidential election with two of the most unpopular nominees in the history of presidential elections. And it becomes a real challenge for us sometimes to think, what do I want to do? I mean, here we are, it's Memorial Day weekend. We're celebrating people who died for our freedoms. And I just don't feel like people who sacrificed for our country did so that we could choose between the lesser of two evils. I really feel like people died and gave their lives so that we could say we are proud and thankful for the leadership we have in our country. I believe that is what is important for us when we talk about leadership, is to understand that so often we settle for leftovers. Now today, I am not here to tell you who to vote for in any election. Today, I'm here to challenge you in the way God has challenged me to look and be sure that I am not settling for leadership leftovers. Now, the last time we were in Judges together, we were looking at the life of Gideon. We saw what he did. And in fact, after he frees his people, they try to make him king. This is something Israel struggles with a lot, but they decided they needed a king. And Gideon says in Judges 8:23, "I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you." So he denies the opportunity to become king of Israel. Now, he's flawed. He's not perfect. He has 70 sons by multiple wives, and also has a side relationship with a female servant that gets him another son named Abimelech. Now, the Bible tells us that Gideon is in charge of Israel for 40 years. It's a time of peace, but then he dies. And we know what happens to the people of Israel when they lose leadership. They stray away from God. And so once again, Gideon dies, and the people stray away from God, back to Baal, back to this false god. And this son, Abimelech, decides it's his chance to make his move. Abimelech is from this town called Shechem, and Shechem was like the center of Baal worship. If you wanted to worship Baal, this is where you went. So he goes back to his hometown. He says, "Hey, all you Baal lovers, I would love for you to support my candidacy for king." And they say, "Why should we do that?" He said, "Well, because the other guys, they don't love Baal. I like Baal." "Okay, we're with you then." And he hires worthless fellows, the Bible says. They travel and find his brothers, and Abimelech and these worthless men massacre his brothers. Get rid of all of them. So that way, he won't have to worry about anyone challenging his authority. He does miss one, though. A young man named Jotham, Gideon's youngest son. He misses him. Jotham escapes. And so Abimelech goes back to Shechem. He says, "Hey, I'm your king now." They say, "Sure, okay." They give him a crown. They move on. And then the Bible tells us that Jotham, this young man who Abimelech wants dead, Jotham travels to Shechem, to the place where they worship Baal. He travels all the way there, and he shares what is recorded as the first parable in the Bible. Before Jesus was doing it, we have it in Judges chapter 9. And this parable that he shares is not just for the people in that moment. It's a parable about leadership that matters even today. Our big point today is simply this: don't settle for and don't serve leadership leftovers. Let's take a look at Judges chapter 9. We're going to read verses 7 through 15 as we see this parable that young Jotham is sharing with the people. It says, "When it was told to Jotham," this is that Abimelech had been made king, "he went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim and cried aloud and said to them, 'Listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went out to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, "Reign over us." But the olive tree said to them, "Shall I leave my abundance, by which gods and men are honored, and go hold sway over the trees?" So the tree said to the fig tree, "You come and reign over us." But the fig tree said to them, "Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees?" And so the tree said to the vine, "You come and reign over us." But the vine said to them, "Shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees?" Then all the trees said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in good faith you are anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." This parable is what I would call a parable of gradual regression. You see an opening where these trees are going to a good leader and ultimately settling on bramble. Now, some of your translations translate that as a thorn bush. I don't know why. I don't use the word bramble a lot, but I am just enamored with this word. And I've been using it and no one knows what I'm talking about. So, bramble means thorn bush. But you see this gradual regression. This is a picture of an olive tree that you might find in Israel. This is where the parable starts. It's the leader they start with. And here's where they end up. A thorn bush. This gradual regression. And as you look through these trees, Jotham is explaining to them not about horticulture, but about leadership and the type of leaders that they can choose from. And you see these leaders described here. The first one he points out to them is this olive tree, which is a picture of a proven leader. When you're in Israel, just like you saw there, these large trees, these trees can be nearly 1,000 years old. Super impressive. They last for a long time. And so whenever Jotham is sharing this parable and he's talking about an olive tree, they would have thought, oh, well, if you're going to pick a tree, that's the one. That's the leader you would take. This tree had immense value, not just for food, but for oil that they'd use for cooking. They'd use it for sacrifices. They'd also use it to anoint a king. They'd use it for all sorts of reasons. The olive tree would be the obvious candidate for leadership, just like Gideon had been an obvious candidate. But ultimately, the olive tree says, no thanks. And just as the trees turned to something else, the people had come to Gideon. Gideon had said, you need to go to God. And they said, what's behind door number two? And so you're seeing already this gradual regression. Jotham is ultimately saying to them, this is the choice that you are making as well. So they start with an olive tree. Seems like a good choice. Olive tree says, no thanks, I'm busy. So they go to a fig tree, which is a picture of the steady leader. Someone who's available, but still learning. Fig tree is an important tree. We see that throughout the Bible, but mostly just used for food. It's not quite as hardy, but it's still a good tree. And this tree reminds me of Joshua. Remember Joshua as he served with Moses? He served with him faithfully. He's walking along and he's learning from Moses as he goes through life, but there's still a lot of lessons he has to learn. And so we need to recognize that there are some people out there that are kind of always around, look like leadership material, but they still need some mentoring. And when we have leaders who think they are fully equipped to lead and don't need anything else, then we find leaders who are really dangerous. Even from a proven leader, you should find someone who's willing to constantly learn from other people. One of the things I love as a history buff is I love presidential history, you know, because I thought I was going to be president, so I wanted to, you know, make sure that I was, you know, representing everyone who'd come before me well. But you know, at the very beginning when George Washington was president, he created a cabinet. He created a cabinet of advisors. That wasn't something that he was told he had to do by the Constitution. This was something he just said, okay, everyone thinks I'd be a good leader, but I know me, and I need other people to speak into my life. A good leader allows other people to speak into their lives. So you see this small regression, but then you see a bigger drop-off. The trees go from asking a tree to a vine. Now, if you didn't take horticulture or have never been outside, a vine is not a tree. This is really a picture of settling. And so you see this steep drop. Yes, grapes were used for a lot of purposes, but vines aren't trees. And so the vine is basically saying, hey, you know what? I like to party. I got things going on. I really don't have time to lead you. And to me, this is a picture of relational leaders. And we have all known, and perhaps some of us have been, relational leaders at times. Relational leaders are people who are very likable, and they like people to like them. And so they oftentimes don't enjoy making tough decisions. They don't like doing things that will make someone unhappy. I love making people unhappy. It's one of my greatest traits. No, I'm just seeing if you're listening. Okay. Some of you are like, yeah, you make me unhappy quite a bit. So you see the standard continuing to lower, and listen, no matter what it is in your life, whether it is a relationship that you're looking for or anything else, when you begin to lower your standards, they usually just keep getting lower. Once you decide that that line in the sand can be moved and you can redraw it somewhere else, you'll just keep redrawing it until the point comes that you stop drawing the line at all and standards go away completely. And where do these trees ultimately end up? With the bramble, with the thorn bush, with the unqualified leader. They have hit rock bottom. Trees are asking thorns to lead them. And this is Jotham's ultimate point. He says, the trees and Israel have settled on leadership leftovers. They recognized what they needed when they started with a strong, proven leader. And when they couldn't get the kind of leader they knew they needed, they just took whatever they could get. That's what causes you to eat a McDonald's. You just took whatever you could get. Sometimes we're driving along, and whenever we're coming back as a family, we drove back from Pennsylvania, and I'm driving along, and we're getting hungry. And so I asked my wife this question, where do you want to stop to eat? And I know that no matter where we stop, she doesn't want to eat there. But we got to stop somewhere. And so you're constantly saying, so what's the best, worst choice we could make? That is what is happening here with their leader. Israel is constantly knowing who should lead them, God. And they're saying, oh, but what else is on the menu? Who else is around? You know, didn't think he was so great, but maybe not so bad. And so we have to really start examining ourselves, because when you look at what they have allowed to lead them, they are no longer under protection. Listen, thorn bushes aren't really useful for anything except keeping people away. Sometimes they'll say, how do you make your house safer? Well, you put thorn bushes underneath your windows so that, you know, burglars will get hurt or injured or whatever. I mean, no one says, you know, I'd like to attract some people. I think I'll put some thorn bushes out in my yard. No, you walk up someone's house, there's thorn bushes, that means go away. They don't want to see you or talk to you or even know you. So you see this thorn bush, and people of Israel are ultimately deciding that it's better to have a bad leader than no leader. And that's not true. It's better to have no leader than a bad leader. It's amazing how quickly you can be taken down. And so Jotham is making this point. He's saying Abimelech, this guy that just took everything, is going to offer you nothing but pain. In fact, look at verse 15. As the trees come and they ask the bramble to rule over them, when you look at verse 15, he says, come and take refuge in my shade. How many of you on a hot summer day have said, boy, I need some shade. I think I'll go lie underneath a thorn bush. No, you've never. Why not? Because there's no shade to be offered. Now, that olive tree we saw earlier, or a big oak tree or something else, you could sit underneath because there's some protection, there's some shade. Many times I think as I'm walking along that long commute from my house to the office, on rainy days, you know, I have that big tree in my yard and I'll be walking along, it can be raining so hard, but as I'm walking underneath that tree all of a sudden, it's like I'm protected from the water. I feel like a superhero. And then all of a sudden I get from underneath it and I'm not protected. But we don't have a bunch of thorn bushes I crawl underneath so I don't get wet on rainy days, because a thorn bush doesn't offer me any protection. And listen, in this parable, as the thorn bush down here on the ground is speaking to tall trees saying, come, get underneath me and I'll protect you, They recognize that that's not going to happen. There's no protection to be offered. I remember going through basic training and learning the difference between cover and concealment. Cover is something that protects you. Cover is something that allows you to have some sort of safety, like getting behind that tree. Concealment is when you get into something, you're just trying to be hidden. In fact, I was reading about the LRPs. These are the long-range reconnaissance patrols that happened in Vietnam. And these would be small teams of maybe 4 to 6 men. And they said sometimes they would have to get to a spot, and they're basically just watching what the enemy is doing. And so they would go, and they needed to get there early. And so what they would do is find the ugliest, thorniest, most disagreeable plant and put themselves as deep into the middle of it as they could. It didn't provide them any protection from bullets, but they were trying to conceal themselves somehow. Ultimately, though, it offered them no real protection. And so the bramble is offering to these trees, "I'll protect you." And it's offering nothing real. Now, when you think about leaders that God has been raising up through the book of Judges, they all seemed to serve two purposes. Number one, to rescue Israel, to bring them out of their oppression. And number two, to bring them back to God. When you look at this man Abimelech, his purpose is Abimelech. His desire is himself and his name, so much so that he is willing to eliminate his entire family so that he can be in charge. That's how important leadership is to him. And so in verse 15, when it says, "Let fire come out of the bramble," he's basically saying, "Okay, I'll lead you, I'll protect you unless you make me mad, and then it's not going to be so good for you. Make me feel valued, or I'll make you pay." That's what their new leader is saying. A true leader must focus on building value in the people they lead and not in building value in themselves. Now, when we look at this parable that Jotham shares, what does it mean for us? What is the point and what is the purpose for us? Ultimately, this parable is challenging our view of the leadership that's in our lives. You have to ask yourself this question: do your leaders provide fruit and shade and ultimately protection for those that they lead? When we think about our government, you as a Christian and as a responsible citizen should be a person who votes. You should be a person who's aware of what's going on. And as a pastor and as an individual, I've heard some people say, "You know what, this year I think I may just not vote." Listen, if you ever go and you say there's a certain race I can't vote for, listen, there's a lot of others you can. If you feel like you couldn't vote for the president of our country, you can still vote for legislators, and they're just as important. So be a responsible citizen, a responsible Christian, and don't say, "Well, you know, I didn't vote for anybody." Well, then hush. Okay? We need people to vote. We need people to be responsible, to be involved. But we also need to think about the leadership we see in our church. Now, this is tough for me because as the leader of this church, this is where I could just say all the things that I'm good at and say, you know, a leader who, you know, combs his hair well on Sunday mornings, you know, and does whatever he does. You know, that's not what I'm going to get into. But when you think about whether you're installing a pastor or deacons, we're going to be installing 2 new deacons on Father's Day. I'm looking forward to adding those men. Or just a ministry leader. We as a church must have standards. There must be standards in the leadership of our church. Ultimately, we reveal those standards in our church mission. When we talk about reaching upward and reaching outward, I think about that when I'm thinking about leaders in our church. Is this a person who I believe is reaching upward? Is this a person who I believe is trying to grow closer to the Lord? Because if not, I don't care how hard they work, they will not bring fruit and shade and protection to those that they minister to. I could come up here, and if I come up here apart from the Lord, I offer you nothing. How many times have I seen pastors who have been completely disqualified from ministry by their actions, who have been called upon by a church to come and be their pastor because they're a good preacher. Too often, true leadership is not shown in 30 minutes standing in front of people. Leadership is shown by what you do each and every day, and not just when I'm in the office, and not just when you're in your ministry role. You show leadership regularly by the attitude you display in your own personal devotion to the Lord. That's why Gideon was a man who ultimately was reaching upward to God, and he's calling them to do the same thing when he says, "The Lord must rule over you. You don't need me as much as you need him." Yes, we're thankful for good leaders in our lives. I'm thankful for pastors who have invested in me and those that have been important in my lives. But ultimately, a good pastor points you to the Good Shepherd and towards a God who is the ultimate lead for your life. And so, for any of us in here, examining and criticizing our leaders is easy. Sometimes it's fun. All of us can do it. All of us can point out the flaws in the people that lead us. Here's Abimelech's problem. Abimelech wasn't willing to point out the flaws that characterized himself. All he cared about was leading himself and having power. And so the question becomes, have you examined yourself in regards to the leadership that you show? Now, sometimes I talk to people about the leadership of their lives, and they'll say, "Well, I'm not a leader. I don't have any leadership." And I say, that's not true. I'll give you just a couple examples. In your home, husbands, are you setting a standard of leadership in your home that your children know that ultimately you don't rely on what's in the checkbook, but ultimately you rely on God for the provision of your family? Does your family know that? Mothers, you have leadership of your kids. Are you spiritually investing in your kids? And not just by sitting down with them with the Bible, but by the way you just talk during the course of your day, by the things that they see you doing, maybe when you don't recognize it. And yes, kids, are you being leaders in your own homes? Maybe you've got a younger brother or sister. Listen, they do watch you. They pay attention to what you're doing. Every person has opportunities for leadership, a lot of times right in their own home. But what about at work? Do you show good leadership to those that maybe work underneath you if you're an employer? But do you also show good leadership to those you work with? Yes, you can be a leader without being the boss. By the way that you react to your supervisor, by the way you react to situations, you too can be a lead. And the question becomes, if people know you are a Christian, how are you influencing them by the way that you lead at work? Yes, you are a leader even if you are not the supervisor. You have an opportunity to influence people. And here in ministry, right here in the church, many of you are ministry leaders. You have ministry impact. And the question becomes, are you giving your best or are you giving leftovers? Are you taking the time to ensure that leftovers don't become the norm for your ministry? I was just talking this week to Kayla. I always like calling out Kayla because she just loves it. And I appreciate so much her willingness to go in and help us strengthen some things within our nursery. And she came to me last weekend and she said, "I'm creating a packet for visitors so that when they come to the nursery for the first time, they can have this. Would you write a little blurb from the pastor?" Here's the thing. The nursery we have here is already better than a lot of the nurseries that I've had in previous churches. She could have just said, "You know what? Things are going really well. I'm good." But she decided to look and say, "How can I make this better?" In fact, she said, "I look at it as a parent. As a parent with children, what do I want this to look like? See, that is the mark of leadership. Leadership is not, well, you know, I got 5 minutes and I have to do something here in 5 minutes for ministry, so blah. That doesn't serve anybody, anything, any good. We have to make sure that we're prepared. You know, I wrote a blog recently about when I was young in ministry, and my pastor called me on Saturday night to tell me that he was sick. And he said, "Do you have a sermon you could preach?" And I lied and said, "Yes," because I just wanted to preach so bad. I didn't care. And so I went on the internet, and I went to one of those websites where you can download a sermon. And so I did. I downloaded someone else's sermon. And I kind of put some personal things in it and marked out their name and put my name. And then I preached it. And guess what happened? Nothing. You know why? Because I was just giving leftovers. You see, I knew there was going to be opportunities where my pastor would be out and he would say, "Heath, are you ready?" And I could have been, but I wasn't. And so I gave the church leftovers. And it's just like when you get leftovers. Now, okay, I recognize that chili is better leftover. So I recognize that the analogy breaks down somewhat. But let's pretend like you don't have any chili. I'm talking about all that other stuff, okay? We all recognize when we're being served leftovers. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were some people that morning who were like, "Man, like, does Heath even know what his next point is in this message? I was just given..." And so now that lesson continues to resonate in my mind. I don't just sit down on a Tuesday and say, "Okay, well, you know, what will I say on Sunday?" I mean, I really wrestle with these messages because so many times God's speaking something to me. Those of you who are teachers or have preached before or any opportunity, you know what that's like to really let the message wrestle with you. And so just like leftovers are obvious at the dinner table, they're obvious in our ministry leadership. We have to be careful to give our best because we've all sat underneath an unprepared Sunday school teacher or an unprepared pastor. We know what that looks like, and we don't want that to be us. And so when you look at this parable, Jotham's point that he's giving to the people of Israel is crystal clear. When you settle for poor leadership, whether it's from those that you entrust it to or from your own life in your home, work, ministry, poor leadership is going to produce poor results. And in fact, ultimately, Abimelech and the people of Israel become enemies. He wants what's best for him, they want what's best for them, and so they fight. And that's what happens when we have leaders that are more concerned about themselves and concerned about the people underneath them. And Jotham has no desire to replace Abimelech. In fact, he says, "I spoke these things so that God might listen to you." He's trying to bring them into closeness with God, not closeness with him. He doesn't want the crown. He's saying you need to give the crown to God. You need to allow God to have complete oversight and command and leadership of your life. And so again, the question for us is, are we settling for, or are we perhaps even serving leadership leftovers? When we allow a perfect and holy God to be the lead of our lives, we find ourselves unwilling to settle for so much less. When you see what it is to be loved by God, when you see what it is to be protected by God, you don't want to settle for less, and you don't want to give less to others. This morning, I challenge each of you, just as God has challenged me this week, are you praying for the leadership of our country? I have to admit, I don't do it enough. Do you pray for the leadership of our state, in our city? Do you pray for the leadership of our church? Are you taking that time to really ask God to move in the hearts of people? Are you serving leadership leftovers yourself? Do you have some ministry opportunity or responsibility within the life of our church as a leader or a worker or whatever it is, and you're just given leftovers? Isn't it so much better when you know you've prepared something that is really going to bless somebody? When you know that you've really gone into God's word, when you've really gone in by prayer and said, "God, bless this do this? And most importantly, is Jesus Christ the Lord and the lead of your life? Because without Him, all you have are leftovers. All you have are the good things that the world says they have to offer, which Scripture reveals to us will bring us no joy, will bring us no peace, and will bring us no hope.